If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And a wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. Great to be here. Great to share some ideas, to look at the Parsha of the week, to look at the events of the week, and to try and understand purpose in life. As I always say, Torah is the source of life. Torah is the wisdom of God. God gave us his wisdom into the words of Torah, and it enables us to live our lives far more perfectly, with a sense of purpose, with a sense of direction, with a sense of clarity. I'm broadcasting from overseas. I'm here at a family chasana, so I hope my voice comes through clearly and I can convey my ideas as best as possible. It's a wonderful Shabbos, the Shabbos Mevorachim Tammuz, an interesting but complicated month. Tammuz is a month which, together with the month of Av, we are told could be either months of great joy and goodness, or God forbid, a month of sadness and mourning. And we take a look at the month of Tammuz, and we see that indeed, Tammuz is in fact a month that contains within it a tragedy when the Jewish people unfortunately had lost their way while living in Israel. And then on 3 weeks begin, which talk to us about destruction. First of all, the walls of Jerusalem, the walls of the temple, and which culminated tragically on the 9th of Av, Tisha B'Av, with the actual destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple. Which brings to mind that Tammuz is a month of huge, huge potential. Because whenever there is a terrible tragedy, there is within it the potential of the opposite, of great purpose and great joy. And this is why we have to approach the month of Tammuz with an understanding that this is a month of tremendous transformation. The ability to take events which are sad, to take events which are tragic, to take situations historically which brought us to a state of shame, destruction of the temple, the exile of the people. And we think to ourselves, how can we possibly correct that? And the answer, of course, is within that very same situation is a potential to transform from one degree to the other to a situation of absolute joy. And this is why, as we know when we talk about months, we talk about the fact that each month is represented by a particular human sense, one of the senses. And the sense that is connected with the month of Tammuz is the sense of sight, seeing things clearly. Seeing is a tremendous gift. It enables us to interact with the world, enables us to interact with each other. It enables us to see things, and to see things mean that there is a dimension of clarity. When you don't see properly, you don't see the situation clearly, you don't see the environment, you don't see what in fact is taking place, things become hazy, they become uncertain, unclear. Sight is a tremendous gift that God gave us. It comes from the core of our soul into the body of the eye, and we're able to see. But seeing is metaphorical as well. Seeing means to recognize something for what it truly is, not as it necessarily might appear at the outset, but to look deeply into a situation and to see what in fact is really taking place, what in fact is something that I should be seeing. In fact, our sages tell us that when God created the world, he brought light, and light was so powerful that one could see from one end of the world to the next. But he hid this light because the power of sight potentially is able to do whatever it is that sight can do with every dimension of our imagination, to see from one end of the world to the other, to recognize, to have x-ray vision, to look at something and to know it completely and thoroughly, disregarding any limitation of time, of space, of any geographic limitation. Sight is powerful. And this is why in the month of Tammuz, we are given sight, because we have to look beyond the obvious. We have to look beyond, as I mentioned earlier on, beyond the tragedy, beyond the destruction, beyond the loss, and to recognize that deep within this situation is joy, is building, is purpose, is renewal in the most powerful sense of the word. And this is why, as well, every month is represented by one of the 12 tribes, and the tribe that represents the month of Tammuz is Reuven, the firstborn of Jacob. Reuven was a tremendously pious man. In fact, when Jacob blesses his children, he speaks about Reuven as being that particular individual that is first in every sense of the word. Reuven, his name was given because his mother said, God saw my plight. Reuven means to see, to recognize. Just as the sense of the month, sight and seeing, Reuven is the leader of the tribe of Reuven, which speaks about sight. He had the capacity for inner sight. In fact, as I mentioned, he was a very pious man, and he was instrumental in saving the life of Joseph when his brothers actually wanted to kill him. And, well, as the story develops, they threw him into a pit with snakes, with serpents and scorpions, and Reuven said he'll come back and rescue his brother. However, as we know, his brother was sold in the absence of Reuven, because Reuven was involved in a process of teshuvah. Reuven not only is sight, but repentance as well. And as we've often discussed, what is repentance? Repentance is the ability of taking a negative act in the past and transforming it into a positive. That is donot naaseh. The intention sins that a person tragically might perform from time to time are transformed into absolutely perfect divine commandments. Can you imagine taking something which is negative, taking something which is against the will of God, taking something which is considered a tremendous blemish on one's life, a distortion of his true purpose, and you take that situation, even though it happened yesterday, a month ago, or a year ago, 10 years ago, and to transform it through the process of tshuva, you actually change the absolute negative into an absolute positive. But this is what the month of Tammuz is all about. And of course, the sign, interestingly enough, the zodiac sign for the month of Tammuz is Cancer, or the crab. Now, the crab is a non-kosher creature, but even though it's non-kosher, we can learn a lesson from it. We can learn a lesson from everything within God's creation. And the lesson that we learn from the crab is, number one, interesting creature. He has a shell. He lives within that shell. The shell is a hard, hard exterior, but within it, there is softness. And this is what a person has to understand. Sometimes you see a situation in life which is hard and difficult, as strong as a shell, but you look beneath it and you see life and vitality and a softness, a gentleness. This is how we have to look at the world. This is the month of Tammuz, the month of Tammuz, to recognize what is deep within. And also, the crab loses its shell from time to time. It breaks off in order to grow another one that would accommodate his growing body. And this is what Tammuz is all about as well, that what we think is a barrier in life is removed. And we begin to grow, we begin to change in an altogether different way. And this is what the month of Tammuz is all about. Yes, it has stories of tremendous tragedy. However, it also contains the potential of tremendous change. This is something which each and every one of us given to us during this month. We have to use that energy in the most positive way. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about this incredible month of Tammuz, which on the one hand brings to mind tragedy and sadness and mourning, but at the same time contains within it the potential of changing all of that, of transforming it into days of joy, into days of festivity. In fact, our sages tell us that when Mashiach comes, please God, very soon in our time, the day of Tisha B'Av, which is the saddest day in the Jewish calendar, will be transformed into the ultimate holiday and will be one of the very few holidays that we will observe with great joy. at the time of Mashiach. But listen to this verse. Dreaming about Aliyah, your future in Israel starts here. Join the South Africa Aliyah Expo 2026 on Sunday, the 21st of June, hosted by the Israel Center South Africa of the Jewish Agency for Israel. Come discover everything you need to know about making Aliyah, building a life in Israel, exciting young adult programs, career opportunities, and so much more. Meet expert delegates from Israel, ask your questions, and gain real insight through inspiring sessions and one-on-one meetings. Don't miss this opportunity to turn your Aliyah dream into reality. Register today on the Israel Center SA Facebook page, Israel Center SA of the Jewish Agency for Israel, walking the journey with you. So as I said, the month of Elul, the month of Tammuz, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Teshuvah. The month of Teshuvah brings to mind the great story that we read in the Parsha of this week, Parsha Shlach, where Moses sends the agents, the spies, into Israel to investigate the land. Is it a strong land? Are the cities fortified or are they open? Is it a fertile land, agricultural? Are the people strong or the people weak? He gives them very clear instructions. And we know the tragic story of how they come back. And instead of lauding the incredible, incredible qualities of the Holy Land of Israel, which was the ultimate purpose of coming out of Egypt, to receive the Torah and to implement values of Torah, commandments of Torah, into the living process within the land, they come back with a negative story. It's a land of destroying its inhabitants. We can never occupy it properly. It will bring us down. It will destroy us. And we know how the various commentaries speak about this incredibly difficult story. Pious men, 10 pious men, heads of tribes, individuals who are endowed with great, great spiritual energy. How could they possibly turn against the Jewish people, against God, against Moses, and give this negative report about the promised land? I'm not going to go too deeply into what happened over there, but to talk about how it's possible for such individuals to do what they did. But it's prefaced with the following obvious question. Didn't they do their job? Moshe asked them, look at the land. Is it strong? Is it weak? Is it fortified? Is it open? Are the people strong? Are the people weak? Is it a fertile land? That's just what they did, isn't it? They brought back the fruits to show these incredibly giant fruits. But they said, yes, we feel that the inhabitants of the land are very strong, and they will overwhelm us. Cities are powerful and fortified, and others are open, but very, very strong defensively. They were simply reporting, weren't they? But we know it's not that way. Because even though when you say something in a particular sort of way, that although it cannot be faulted as a lie, it's negative and destructive. It's like, well, any type of situation that a person wants to convey negativity, you can say it in the most positive terms, but the underlying factor, the subtext, is destructive. It's like positive and passive arrogance and passive anger. You behave in a particular sort of way, but what you convey are terrible vibrations of human behavior. The question is, what happened over here? Why was it that instead of conveying the truth as it should have been conveyed, the spies, the agents, the miraglim, use this negative talk, like passive aggression almost? And one of the answers is because the whole story is an insight into the relationship and conflict between reason and intellect and faith. You know, on the one hand, what makes us special creatures? In fact, God tells us that in all of creation, it's the human who is the ultimate purpose of creation, the one who has choice, the one who is able to put things into effect, to build, to destroy, God forbid. The power of the individual is overwhelming. But what is that which gives the individual the status that he possesses is his intellect. We are creatures of intelligence. Deep within us, there are powerful dimensions of intellect. For those of you who study the Tanya will know about Chachma, Bina, and Daat. Chachma, which is wisdom, Bina, which is understanding, Das, which is knowledge. And these are not simple terms. These define the most powerful spiritual abilities to understand, to know. We are creatures of intellect. And because we are creatures of intellect, we use reason, at least what we consider to be reason, to present and to promote our arguments, our views. But very often, if we look at it seriously, reason can be quite destructive. Because when we take a look at something in the cold, unfeeling, totally objective dimension, it can turn out to be extremely destructive. And as we've seen throughout history, that many of the nations who had great philosophers and great thinkers were actually violent, destructive people. In our own generation, we've seen that. A nation that was known for its sciences, for its intellectual development, for its engineering, for its philosophers, for its music. They became barbarians, killing 6 million of our brothers and sisters. How is that possible? Because it was based on reason. They came to whatever arguments they did by reasonable deduction, and therefore the Jew was a lower type of creature. How do we prevent reason becoming destructive? On the one hand, to respect reason as a tremendous quality that makes us the humans that we are, and yet have the strength to know that reason alone is not enough. And the answer is faith, emunah bitachon, to believe in God. God and faith in God and trust in God is the ultimate foundation upon which you can build great things, and you can develop your intellect and powers of reason to unbelievable dimensions. But it has to be protected by, it has to be governed by emunah and faith in God. And this is the great conflict that a human being goes through, that societies go through, the conflict between reason and faith. And therefore, we have to be very careful that when we start thinking about something, when we present a particular point of view, we have to ask ourselves, what am I trying to do with the power of intellect and reason that I have? Am I going to do something positive? I'm going to do something which will lead me and others to a fulfillment of God's purpose in this world. Will I use my powers of reason for good as defined by God and Torah? Or God forbid, am I using my power of reason simply to justify a particular type of behavior, violent and negative and destructive, though it may be. And yet I say it's reasonable as far as I'm concerned, because you had great minds who actually thought and behaved in that sort of way. And this is where faith comes in. Ani ma'amin, I have to believe with absolute faith in the existence of God. And not only in the existence of God, but as the Rambam, Maimonides, points out, not only do we believe in the existence of God, we have to accept the divinity of Torah, that every single word comes from God himself, and this is what he wants in this world. When Moshe spoke to the agents and the spies, he said, I'm asking you to go into the land and to investigate the land, but for the purpose of entering the land, for the purpose of coming in to the ultimate promise that God gave the Jewish people, the promise that he gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This great inheritance, the Holy Land, is ours. And we have to, yes, know how to come into the land properly, to understand, to prepare, if necessary, to go to war, and ultimately to agriculture, etc., etc., etc. But of course, at the same time, you have to come back with a report that tells us just that, to use the powers of investigation and reason in a positive and constructive way, a way of fulfilling the will of God. And this is where they erred. They thought to themselves, reasonably speaking, rationally speaking, this land is too big for us. This land is too strong for us. This land will overwhelm us. And this is why they failed. And this is the great tragedy that he brought about in the Jewish people. A great tragedy of destruction, a great tragedy of having been punished by wandering in the desert for 40 years, etc., etc., etc. We have to learn not only to balance reason with faith, but to make faith the foundation upon which reason is built. Yes, we are creatures of intellect, and this gives us tremendous status in the hierarchy of creation. But we have to realize that ultimately, it can be abused, and it was abused time and again. However, when we inject the aspect of faith and trust in God, our reason is protected as well, and it's used for good and powerful things. And this is why it's interesting that at the end of that story, God speaks about the mitzvot that we ultimately have to do in the land of Israel. Strange. Even though he said, you won't enter, it's the only the next generation will enter. He gives them, and it's going to be 40 years away. He starts talking about the commandments they have to fulfill. And one of those commandments is the mitzvah of challah. When you bake challah, you make the dough, you have to give a certain portion to holy things. And this is something which is interesting. And this mitzvah of challah has become so powerful, it is so powerful. Why? Why challah of all the mitzvot? The answer, of course, is when you speak about challah metaphorically. What happens is you take flour and you mix it with water and you turn it into dough. And only then can it be baked and some type of edible, nurturing food is created. But first, there has to be a merger of two things, of the flour and the water. Flour on its own will burn, water on its own. Well, water on its own is just water. But when you bring them together, you create this new commodity, this powerful commodity of physical and spiritual nurturing called challah. A reminder that the only way he can hope to enter the land, to retain the land, and to understand the purpose of the holiness of the land is when we strive for creating unity. And unity means taking the various and different elements, bringing them together, producing something which is positive, producing something which is nourishing. And this is why we have to realize and understand what our true purpose is. And this is the mistake that the agents made when they came into the land. They sought from a purely human, powerful intellect, but without faith. And that's why it ended not so well. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about the strange story of the spies that Moshe sent into Israel and the tragedy that followed when they turned against God, Moshe, and the Jewish people by bringing a negative report. How did that happen and why did that happen? But before that, listen to this. We want to hear from you. Chai FM is updating our Voices of Chai, and we need your voice to do it. Send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less, and tell us why you're part of the Chai FM community. What keeps you listening? What does the station mean to you? Send your voice note to 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. We can't wait to hear from you. Also, Thursdays and Fridays mean fresh magic at the family bakehouse. Golden challahs, babkas, biscuits, and cakes baked in small batches with no shortcuts. Perfect for Shabbat or the weekend. Find the family bakehouse at Genesis, Orux, and selected distribution centers. What happened over there? What changed the minds of these pious men? We explained. It was the conflict between reason and faith. And they allowed reason to take prominence without the influence of faith. And therefore, although what they said sounded true, was in fact negative and destructive. Which brings us to the Haftarah of this week. Second chapter of the book of Joshua. The story takes place 39 years later after the story that we read in the Parsha. And Joshua is about to lead the Jewish people into the promised land, and he too sends agents and spies into Israel to see what the land is all about. And the question is, why did he do it? He did it because God commanded him to do it. God said, do that. But it was an altogether different type of mission. Not 12 people, two people. Without fanfare, it was done quietly under the cover of night. It was done secretly. And they came back, of course, with a report that said, it's time to enter the land. Who were these agents? He sent two great men. One was Kalev, and Kalev actually accompanied Joshua on the first mission that was sent by Moses. But they were the only two that remained loyal to the mission, remained loyal to God, Moshe, and the Jewish people. The other 10, as we know, made a terrible mistake. The other one was Pinchas, who actually became a Kohen, something which was completely unique. And he did so because of his zealousness, because of his tremendous loyalty, because of his tremendous devotion to God. Joshua needed two type of people. He needed Kalev, who had proven himself the first time around, and Pinchas, a man of absolute total devotion and strength and courage and fearlessness, is what he did at the time. We read that story later. What he did at the time was quite dangerous, but it was there to sanctify the name of God. And they go into the land quietly under the cover of night to investigate. No fanfare. Come back with a powerful and positive report. We have to look at that story because sometimes we have to know that in order to accomplish something of great importance, it should be done without fanfare. It should be done in a way that doesn't create too much of a commotion. Because if it does, there will be resistance, both physical and spiritual. There will be pushback. And in order to accomplish something and to make sure that it gets done as you do so quietly without fanfare, without all the advertisement that comes along, we live in a world where publicity is what it's all about. Now, sometimes the lack of publicity is far more powerful. These were two great men who accomplished just that. It was a quiet expedition, and it resulted in great success, enabling the Jewish people to march into the promised land as a promised people. But there lies another element. Kalev, the first time around, how did he show his loyalty? How did he actually begin his mission when Moshe sent him in, and that's why he remained loyal? Is because the first thing he did, he went to Hebron. He went to Maarat HaMachpelah, the tomb of the patriarchs. As Rashi says, he went to pray at the graveside of his ancestors, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Leah. That's the first thing he did. In order to ensure that he remains loyal, he knew he couldn't do it on his own. He needed to pray at what we call Kibrei Avot, the gravesides of parents, patriarchs, holy people, and to ask for their blessing that he remains strong and loyal to the mission and to the cause. And that's why Joshua knew that Kalev was the right man. He was the individual who understood how to make sure you behave correctly and remain loyal. You have to reach out to something higher through prayer at the graveside of the patriarchs and matriarchs. And this is something which we have to know in life, the importance of Kibrei Avot, which brings to mind that please God, this coming Thursday is the third of Tammuz, Gimel Tammuz, which is the 32nd Yahrzeit of the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And tens and tens of thousands will be visiting his gravesite over the 24 hours of Gimel Tammuz to pay tribute to an individual who almost single-handedly changed the face of the Jewish world. You look at Chabad today, you look at Lubavitch today, wherever you go in the world, every corner, every distant corner, geographically, metaphorically, in every sense of the word, that ever created through a tremendous vision, a tremendous change following the Holocaust. This is why on this coming Thursday night, there's going to be a tribute to the Rebbe at the HOD Hall at 7:30 p.m. Make sure you're there. You will have something of great, great joy and importance to celebrate. The legacy of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, known as the Rebbe. And this is what it's all about. The Rebbe showed us how to combine incredible intelligence and powers of reason with faith. Did it by example. Those of you who are familiar with teaching the Rebbe will know what kind of profound insights he had into Torah, into life, based upon a powerful intelligence, but at the same time, a man of unbelievable faith. This is how you change the world. So when you're in shul tomorrow, and you're going to bless in the month of Tammuz, think about this story. It has all sorts of interesting elements throughout the parsha, as mentioned, the mitzvah of challah, the stories. It's a parsha which is filled with all sorts of important ideas and messages. And listen carefully. And listen carefully to the Haftarah and see the quiet expedition of Kalev and Pinchas. Listen carefully again. It has something to tell you in personal life, something that will resonate. And when it does, you will be overjoyed. Be in shul. Listen carefully. Good Shabbos.